Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 18th of September. Senator Hillary Clinton unveiled her health care plan yesterday, and it's been receiving a great deal of attention, probably because of the fact that she had revealed a health care plan that didn't fly some years ago, 13 years after her first effort was abandoned, saying when she gave her new health care plan that she still had the scars from that failure. She talked about the plan as necessary to address the crisis of some 47 million people in this country who are uninsured. Americans are now saying that health care and reform of the health care system is extremely important to them, and it could be the second or maybe even first most important issue in this presidential campaign. Recent polls showing only Iraq ranked higher. 15% of the American population, about 47 million people without health insurance. That's a 5% increase over the prior year and the largest increase in 4 years, even though poverty levels fell and household income rose in that period. The number of people covered by insurance through their jobs fell in 2006, and health insurance premiums have gone up 78% since the year 2001. Which is four times the rate of wage increases. No wonder the American people want to talk about this issue. Senator Clinton called for a plan that would ensure coverage for all Americans with federal assistance to help defray the cost. She talked about, well, her plan is called the American Health Choices Plan, and it requires everyone to have health insurance, just as most states require drivers to purchase auto insurance. The Democratic presidential contenders have been of one in advocating universal coverage, but they've parted on specifics. We'll be looking at her plan. We'll be looking at this issue. Republicans are saying what they're calling the Hillary Care. Republican Mitt Romney saying that it's bad medicine. In her plan, we have Washington managed health care. Fundamentally, she takes her inspiration, Romney said, from European bureaucracies. We're happy to have with us a fine health care analyst who's been here several times before. Dr. Helen Halpin is with us, director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California at Berkeley. Her research interests include increasing access to health insurance, consumer experiences in managed care, smoking cessation benefits, and the integration of health promotion and disease prevention services in the U.S. healthcare system. We will be loaded with phone calls. We always are when we're on this issue, so call in early if you have something to say. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is the number. 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation. Professor Halpin, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Was it a tough task for Senator Clinton, considering what she went through 13 years ago, really got beat up on this issue? I would imagine that she had to walk the waters carefully.
I think she did, and I think she learned a lot. To me, what's most remarkable about the plan she released yesterday is how similar it is to the Edwards and Obama proposal.
Hmm.
I really thought that she might try to distinguish herself on this issue, given her experience. But if you look at the framework of what she laid out, it's nearly identical to the elements in both the Obama proposal and the Edwards proposal. She has a few details, I think, that distinguish her that are improvements over those plans, but the basic structure is the same. So I find it quite disingenuous of the Republicans to criticize her when she's basically proposed the same thing that her opponents have.
Yeah, what are the details that are important in her plan?
Okay, I think the details are, one of them is that she would cap the amount that any family would have to pay for their health insurance premiums based on a percentage of their income. They haven't said yet what that percentage is, but I imagine it would be fairly reasonable. If you look at other programs like the Children's Health Insurance Program here in California, they cap the premium to 2 to 2.5% of a family's income, which makes it affordable for everyone. And I think that's really a step forward. It goes beyond just subsidies. It just says you won't be at risk for more than this percentage of what you earn.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think that is important is in all the plans, and the media keeps missing this, I'm not sure why, but that all the plans, Obama, Edwards, and Clinton, provide an option of a public plan. they use the rhetoric, a public plan like Medicare. And what they mean is Medicare as it was originally enacted, mm-hmm. which was a government-run, private delivery healthcare system. Basically what we call a single-payer system. Mm-hmm. These are buried in these proposals. Now, mm-hmm. in the Edwards and Obama proposals, this option is limited. You can only join this public plan if you don't have employer coverage and you don't have Medicaid. But under the Clinton proposal, she goes a step further, which I think is the only way this kind of idea will succeed. And she says, you can keep your own coverage, you can, you know, take the new coverage in the private plans, or you can go into the public plan. And anyone, regardless of your current status, could go into the public plan. And what this does is sets up a very new environment in the healthcare system if it was enacted, in that the public plan would basically compete with the private plans. Hmm. And should Americans choose a single-payer system, which is the public plan, it could voluntarily transition in that direction without forcing everyone in the country to go into it. So it's really quite innovative.
Yes, it's very interesting. And you talk about the fact that we're looking at people paying so much more for premiums and businesses dropping health care.
Yes.
You've been quoted as saying that 30%, this is an incredible amount of money, 30% of every dollar spent on medical care goes to administrative costs compared with up to 5% under Medicare. This may make a public plan seem much more attractive if those are the cost differences.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can either provide the same coverage that people get in the private plan for much less money, or you can provide a much more comprehensive benefit package for the same money.
Mm-hmm. But
so, yes, I mean, there's so much duplication in the system the way it is now. It's so complicated. We have hundreds of insurance companies and thousands of employers, and they're all individually negotiating contracts with each other, and then the plans are negotiating contracts with the individual hospitals and the individual doctors. And so the duplication of effort, the administrative costs required to manage all of this is enormous.
Right, and to trying to figure your way through the system can take hours.
Yes, it can.
Oh, hours and hours. The criticism, of course, is that it's interesting that everybody doesn't make this front and center in their plan, obviously not wanting to be subjected to criticism that this
right.
is socialized medicine. This is a government takeover of medicine. Why are we so fearful of that?
Well, first of all, that is rhetoric that's left over from the 30s.
Oh, my
actually,
gosh.
When we were, you know, and the 40s and the 50s, when it's sort of like the communist threat. What's so funny about that rhetoric of government takeover and government run is that no one's suggesting that we go in that direction. It's what Hillary has proposed is so far from a European healthcare bureaucracy, it's not even funny. What we mean in this country by single payer is the Medicare program. It's a publicly financed program. That's what's public, the financing. But the delivery of health care remains in the private sector, and you can go to any private doctor or hospital that you want. I think that the this rhetoric of socialized medicine is almost a knee-jerk reaction, particularly for the older generation who feared a government-run system. But what socialized medicine would mean is that the government not only financed health care, but it employed all the doctors, it owned all the hospitals, and it delivered the care. And no one in this country is seriously talking about that kind of a system.
Mm-hmm.
It would be impossible, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's un-American. I agree with the rhetoric, but unfortunately the rhetoric is being applied to the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I see what you're saying.
So Americans need to understand that a government finance system is not socialized medicine. I think we will never move away from a private delivery system, and that we need to find a way to make access to that system more equitable and the cost of participating in that system more affordable.
Right. And you're hearing some complaints from doctors who feel they're not making enough money from Medicare, but you don't hear a whole lot of people on Medicare vociferously complaining about Medicare, do you?
No, I think most of the complaints recently have been around the managed care plans that enrollees have had the options to enroll in, and they experience the same kinds of problems and barriers that non-elderly Americans have in engaging in those systems.
Right. What do you think employers will make of all of the Democratic plans. We're talking about Hillary's today, so let's start with
that
one.
Well, I mean, hers, like the others, has a provision that employers either have to offer coverage to their employees or pay a certain percentage of payroll into a pool to help finance coverage for employees that don't have coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that element is the same in all of them. I think there's some concern in the business community that percentage of payroll could creep up over time and that they would no longer have any control over how much they're having to pay out of their payroll for health care. The reality is, though, right now they don't really have much control.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way they've been able to control their own costs, their employer costs, is by passing costs onto the employees.
Mm-hmm.
So we see employee premiums getting higher. Employers are less likely to subsidize them as generously. We see deductibles being introduced and getting higher. We see cost sharing getting higher. We see some benefits being cut. So it's a shell game. I mean, someone's got to pay. And right now, the only way the employers have been successful in cutting their own costs is increasing their employees' costs. And this would prevent that from happening in the future.
And what about, we hear from small businesses all the time that they simply can't afford health care for their employees.
They can't. And none of the candidates, including Senator Clinton's, have included details of how this would actually be financed. I've seen proposals out there that suggest maybe you could give a lower percentage of payroll rate for the small employers compared to the large employers, and that seems reasonable. But I don't think we'll see any of these details come out until someone is actually elected and they have the opportunity mm-hmm. to work with a Congress to really forge a piece of legislation. These are pretty broad brush proposals at this point.
Mm-hmm. One thing that seems to me to be incredibly important with anybody's plan is to cover the people in this country who don't have health insurance. It's just awful. 47 million people without health insurance.
It's shameful.
It's a huge number of people, and it keeps going up. Do all of the plans thoroughly cover those who are uninsured?
They do. In all of the plans, anyone in, you know, any American in this country who wanted health insurance could get health insurance, and if they can't afford it, would get subsidies. Now, it is possible that even with the subsidies, they may find it not affordable. In the Senator Clinton's plan and in Edwards' plan, they won't have any choice. They're going to have to buy coverage. They mandate that individuals have coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Obama distinguishes himself in this area in that he does not have a mandate. So what would likely happen under Clinton and Edwards is that maybe 99.9% of Americans would have health insurance coverage. Under Obama, probably only about 94 or 95% would have health insurance coverage. You have to understand that there's a large population of people out there who may not be able to function within an insurance system. If you're homeless, if you're of a serious mental illness,
mm-hmm.
There are all sorts of conditions that that a very small percentage of the population, 4 or 5%, might have real difficulty complying with that mandate. And what the reason I think that Clinton and Edwards have adopted the mandate is it actually does pretty much guarantee that everyone will have coverage. The question is that a good thing to force people to have it? I don't know. That is up, you know, for political debate. But I think that, you know, we clearly have choices around that issue. And the question is, do you want to force people to pay or be satisfied that 95% have coverage and deal with those 4 or 5% later and figure out what might work better for them than insurance?
We have all four lines going, so we'll take phone calls in just one moment. Our guest this hour is Professor Helen Halpin, and she joins us from California this morning. She's in the School of Public Health at the University of California, Berkeley, and she is director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies. We're talking about health care plans, specifically Senator Hillary Clinton's plan, and I think there was special interest paid to this because of what she went through 13 years ago with trying to institute health care reform in this country. So now all of the major Democratic candidates do have health care reform. How would everybody pay for this? We'll talk about that, of course, because it has to do with getting rid of some of the tax breaks for the wealthy in this country. Will that fly? Is this an expensive plan? We'll talk about all of that as we continue. And take your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now at 800-486-8655, starting with Alan from Delavan. Hi, Alan.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Mine's a three-part thing. One is the rhetoric. You always hear about Canada and how unsuccessful their socialized medicine is. The other thing is, once we get into a socialized medicine, what about transplants and, you know, kidney transplants, pancreas transplants, heart transplants? And research. And the other one is, what really upsets me is most of the bankruptcies, you know, older people, you know, lose their homes, they lose their life savings because we don't have good health care in this country. And now I'll take my, you know, answer off the air.
Hi. To try to answer all of your questions, I don't think none of these proposals suggest a Canadian-type system. As I explained previously, all of them would have government financing, but they all still give the options for all Americans to have private health plans, if that's what you choose. And they all offer very comprehensive benefits. Most of them are based on the benefits that members of Congress themselves get. So the transplants and, you know, most other procedures that are currently covered by insurance would still be covered. So I don't think anyone there needs to worry about having fewer benefits under a plan. I think, in fact, the benefits will be much richer than what most people experience now. As far as the bankruptcy issue, the basic problem there, particularly for the elderly, is the lack of coverage for long-term care. And the Medicare program has never really covered long-term care except on a short-term basis following hospitalization in a skilled nursing facility. We desperately need long-term care insurance for our entire population. I don't believe any of the candidates is talking about that right now. And I think you raise an excellent point. They need to address this very important issue because medical care costs, as you point out, are one of the leading causes of bankruptcy in this country, and no one should go bankrupt because they're sick.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at money for this. It's my understanding, tell me if I'm wrong here, that all of the candidates, Clinton and Obama and Edwards, would be looking at these tax cuts for those who make a lot of money in this country and eliminating those at some point. I think that Clinton has proposed ending some of the Bush-era tax cuts for people making more than $250,000 a year. Are they all going that direction?
Yes, absolutely. I think that the Bush tax cuts, which everyone knows benefited the wealthy enormously and really did very little to help middle-income America, were grossly unfair. They were marketed in such a way that everyone believed they were going to get a big tax cut, but that didn't happen. And I think that the Democratic candidates believe that that money could be put to much better use in helping to finance health care for all Americans rather than fattening the pockets of the wealthiest people in this country.
We go to, is it Zaib from Menominee?
Hi, good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
Professor, good morning to you. Professor, as you said earlier, I quote you that we'll never raid private health care delivery, and I believe so. I'm in the same profession. My question to you is, why not leave it alone, and why not to tackle... why should you and Kathy both say, oh, it's a shame, simply very, you know, very, we should rather say it is a moral crime that kids, and that 47 million people that have no insurance, they are children. And I'm sure all three of us have children are covered, and we are quite, you know, peaceful.
Zaib, I need a question from you. Your phone is really bad.
I can't really. I'm having a difficult time understanding.
Yeah. Can you give us a question, Zaib?
Madam, the question was, let us... tackle this issue head-on that among 47 million people that have no insurance, there half of them are children. So what is plan Dr. Halpern has in regarding that issue.
Did you get that over?
No, I'm sorry, I did not.
What's the plan for over half the 47 million uninsured are children? What's the plan for dealing with that?
Interestingly, the one area of Obama's plan is that he mandates coverage for all children. But in both plans, coverage for children would be mandated in all three. And but all of them include significant expansions in the Children's Health Insurance Program, as well as in the Medicaid program for those who meet the eligibility requirements. And they all three require that all employers offer coverage or pay into the pool so people can get health insurance. So under all of these plans, all children should be covered.
We go next to Edith from Waukesha. Hi, Edith.
Good morning. I have first a statement that doctors became wealthy, excuse me, when Medicare was instituted. What happens when the doctors will become greedier yet? Who will pay for that increased greed? And in Europe, where I am from, and came from a country, Hungary, where socialized medicine is thriving, even though people do get free medical care, if they want to get good medical care, they have to tip the doctor, and this tip will ensure how well they are going to be cared for.
Professor Halpin.
Is she asking me to comment on that system that she just described?
Right.
Well, I mean, tipping, that will work fine for people who have extra out-of-pocket money, but tipping won't work very well for the poor. And unfortunately, in this country right now, the most 80% of the 47 million uninsured have incomes below 200% of the federal poverty level. So they don't have a lot of extra income to tip a doctor to get better fare. I think better care. I think that really is kind of unfair, and creates a system where the wealthy but get better care than the poor. And I don't think that's the direction that we want to go here.
The doctors already get tipped by the pharmaceutical companies, don't they?
Yeah,
yeah.
And the doctors, I mean, the specialists in this country do make good incomes. On average, they make over $250,000 a year. But primary care doctors are in short supply and are not making big incomes and are being worked very hard. And I think it's very important in any of these plans to make sure that there are incentives for young people to go into primary care and that primary care physicians are rewarded for the extraordinary job that they do.
Mm-hmm. Let's play around with some of what you think the American public might do here. These public plans that everybody would like to have, do you think we would go for that? Do you think that it would be easier for us? It would cost less money. Our benefits might, in some cases, be better. And it would be a transition that may happen fairly quickly in this country to public care.
It could. It just depends on, I think what would happen is that at the beginning, not as many people would go in. If it worked well, and it was cheaper, and people found out they had more access to more doctors. I mean, the problem with these health plans is you can only go to the doctors and the hospitals that are on their list.
Right.
For example, here in California, if you belong to one of, let's say, Blue Cross or Blue Shield, and you live in an area of the state, you can only go to, you have to pick one medical group in your region, and usually they're affiliated with one, maybe two hospitals, and those are the only places you go for care.
Mm-hmm.
Under Medicare or under a single-payer system, you can go to any doctor or hospital you want, none of those restrictions. So not only are there more benefits and cost less, you have much more choice of doctors.
Mm.
I think what people want choice of is doctors and hospitals.
Of course.
Not necessarily health plans.
Right, right. I think you're right. That makes a lot of sense. Sure.
So it could be very popular. The beauty of all these proposals is you don't have to go into it. And I think that's the lesson that Hillary Clinton learned last time. We don't want a one-size-fits-all system. Americans want choices. If people are happy with their care under the Clinton plan, they can keep it. And if they're not, they have new options. They have new choices of private plans, or they have the option of the public plan. And it's sort of like, may the best plan win. Or there's no even winning or losing. It's just people will be able to go where they feel most comfortable. And I think that is probably one of the biggest breakthroughs in these plans, is that it gives people more choice of what kind of system they want to get their health care in, and doesn't force anybody to do anything they don't want to do.
Right. And I'm sure that you've seen surveys that indicate whether or not we are happy with our plans, are we?
Well, we're not very happy with our plans, no.
No.
Actually, the satisfaction rates for any one individual are pretty high. The problems are when individuals are becoming what we call underinsured. In other words, they have insurance, but then when they need care, they go to the doctor and they find out that they're not covered. And Michael Moore's movie Sicko was all about that group. There's about 16 million people in this country who, when they go to use their health care, discover, oh my goodness, I'm not covered for the things I need. And those people are underinsured, and they're a big part of the group that's becoming bankrupt. Even though they have insurance, their insurance just doesn't cover what they need. Then there's the 47 million Americans who don't have any insurance. So, I've lost my train of mind.
That's all right. No, you finished your thoughts.
Okay,
we'll move on. Thanks, Edith, very much for your call. Stephen from Madison, hi.
Hi. My question has evolved into a three-part question, but I'll be brief. The first part of my question is, could the Clinton single-payer plan save employers money?
Can I answer that immediately?
Yes.
Her plan is not a single-payer plan.
Right.
Her plan gives you choice. You keep your own insurance if you're happy with it. You get to choose what Congress has, which is a big menu of private plans, if that's what you want. Or you can go into the single-payer plan. Okay, so let's just make clear that she offers all possible options. Keep what you have, buy new private plans, or buy a public plan. And yes, employers will save money. It depends on what percentage they make the payroll tax for the employers. Right now, on average, employers are paying about 7.5% of their payroll on health care costs. If the percentage of payroll under the Clinton plan is less than 7.5%, then on average most firms would save money. But you need to understand that this percentage varies considerably across the country. Some firms pay as little as 3.5% of their payroll for health insurance. Others pay as much as 15%. So any firm that would pay more than the percentage she picks would clearly save money under her plan than at the present time.
The second part of my question is, considering what you just said, what kind of financial burden could an individual who's currently uninsured expect to shoulder if they chose to go into the public aspect of her overall plan?
Well, under her proposal, no one would be required to pay more than a small percentage of their income towards their health insurance premium. So everyone would be capped at a certain level. And if you look at the proposals for most of the public plans, the amount of out-of-pocket costs you have are actually much less than you would have in a private PPO or preferred provider plan. So I think that individuals under her plan who went into the public plan, actually who choose any of the options that she's offered, will on average have face less costs than they do now. I know the Obama campaign estimated under his plan, which is very similar to hers, that the average family would save about $2,200 a year over what they're paying now.
Oh, my. That's substantial.
That's very helpful. Can I ask one more part?
Yes, go ahead.
Finally, I was wondering if you could compare the Clinton plan to the Kucinich plan.
Well, the Kucinich plan is, in fact, a single-payer plan. That's it. Everyone in the whole country would be in that government-financed health plan and have access to any doctor or hospital in the country, have very comprehensive benefits at very little cost. I mean, there's no question, I think, if you ask most serious analysts, that the Kucinich plan would cover more people at a lower cost and provide more access to the healthcare system than any of the other proposals. The big problem with the Kucinich plan is how in the world do we get from here to there? I think what Obama and Edwards and Clinton have done is give us a door, should we choose to open it and walk into it, to go there. And the system could transition. But to have a change that radical overnight would be so disruptive to the economy. I think probably one of the best things he could do to bolster support for his plan is to build in that transition period. and allow only the and permit those who are comfortable with that change to do it immediately, and enable others to do it over time once they feel comfortable that that will work and that will work for them.
I think that once one of our big three candidates gets elected, we'll all be very thankful that Kucinich kept it in the debate as long as he did.
Yes, oh, absolutely. He has really, I think, forced them to make this at least an option in all of their plans, and it's a very welcome improvement.
Thank you, Stephen. Let's go to Peggy from Brilliant next. Hi, Peggy.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on. I have been waiting for this for so long. I am a bipolar person who has had serious problems over the years trying to get insurance companies to insure me. Some of the biggest names, and some of them I won't mention, but have been mentioned here already this morning, just would say, I'm sorry, we can't insure you, and then hang up the phone. And I even went to the state to this HRSP or whatever it is program where you can get insurance to the state, but you pay outrageous numbers. My question for you is, do any of their plans at all speak of people like me, or do you think they will help people like me? Will there be no more of this trying to show previous insurance and all this other red tape that I go through every time I finally am insured?
Absolutely. In fact, most of them, and Hillary's Clinton's plan was very specific about this, would prohibit the insurance companies from using pre-existing conditions like yours and like millions of Americans have from either denying coverage or increasing rates. They would not be able to use your health status to discriminate against you both in the sale of insurance and the cost of insurance. So I think they're all very clear that this is critical. I mean, the way our system works right now, the people who need coverage the most can't get it, and it just doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
So I think you should rest assured that in all these plans, that problem would go away for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that I have several friends who are in the same boat. They've been taking lithium. The minute you mention the word lithium, you might as well have said the word suicide, because they don't want anything to do with you. And,
well, because you have to understand that they are in a business to make a profit,
mm-hmm.
and you represent a loss to them.
Isn't that what you when you say that, it just drives you crazy, doesn't it?
It does drive you crazy. It's
just
inhuman.
Right. So you can't insure the person, even though you're in the business of taking care of somebody's health, because you're going to lose money if that
right.
person gets healthier. It's
yeah.
just, yeah.
So, I mean, but both in all these plans, they would put very strict regulations on the insurance companies to prevent them from doing this anymore.
That
and then
so
you,
good
if
to
you
hear.
Chose, you could always go into the public plan where that would never be an issue.
Right.
Well, that is so good to hear. That is so good to hear, because after 25 years of being on a med, and, you know, I tell them I'm stable. I know people that are stable. Why won't you insure us? And
right.
They're like,
yeah.
well,
or you won't
I'm sorry,
be stable.
I don't know.
Right.
And they all say the same thing, because these poor people are just hired and they're doing a job. And I say, why won't they do that? And they said, we don't know.
Hmm.
We
yeah.
don't know.
Well, it's all about the money.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Thank
yeah,
you very
thanks
much.
Very much for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655-227-2050. Senator Hillary Clinton unveiled her health care plan yesterday. Now we have all the major Democratic candidates with their health care proposals. We have Republicans who have talked about health care as well. Many have taken shots at Hillary's plan. Republican Mitt Romney criticizing her proposal, saying it's bad medicine. We will have Washington-managed health care. But interestingly enough, he helped, while governor of Massachusetts, to put together state subsidies to reduce the cost of private coverage. Since then, he said that he would leave it up to the states to decide whether they supported such a mandate. But obviously, so much attention paid to the Clinton plan, because her original plan was one that was criticized, and you know, some have said that the Republicans took over Congress because of the way that was handled. So she delivered this with great care and admitted that she had her bruises from the last time she talked about health care. 800-486-8655. We go next to Don from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Don.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Don.
Hey, I had a couple of quick questions. I wasn't going to call, but I'm probably going to be affected by this too, so I just wanted to, I was curious. What percentage of the 47 million that are uninsured are people that say, well, I'm healthy enough, I don't want that? That's my first question. I don't want to buy health insurance right now, at least. Maybe they're in 25, 30s, they're pretty healthy in this. So if we have that, maybe there's, you know, we'll get a true measure of the statistic. And my second question is, should one of these candidates become president, is mandating, you know, insurance for everybody, is that going to create more problems than solve it? Because after all, insurance companies want to make money. If you mandate that, is that going to work in our favor? Because money's got to have to come out, come from someplace else.
Right. In terms of the percentage that don't want insurance, it's very small. It's primarily in among extremely wealthy people who can say, I'll just self-insure myself. Or it's young people, 20-somethings, who feel that they're not vulnerable and they're healthy and they don't need it. So I would guess at most maybe 4%. So it's a very small percentage. Of the 47 million, 80% are in working families. Many of them are working more than one job. They have very low-wage jobs. They want health insurance for them and their children, and they simply can't get it. They don't qualify for the public programs. Their employers do not offer it, and the private companies either won't sell it to them or they can't afford it. So they are literally between a rock and a hard place. There is absolutely nowhere for them to turn. Mm-hmm. And that is the vast majority of the people who don't have health insurance in this country are serious, hardworking, low-income people who have fallen through the cracks of this crazy quilt system that we have created.
Who then get into debt, who can't afford. So you've got to go to a doctor sometimes.
No, and then they wait, and then they end up with a huge medical bill, and then they can't pay it, and then they're bankrupt.
Right. Thanks very much for your call, Don. We go next to, is it Quamar from Manitowoc?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Two brief comments and then the response from your guest. One, you mentioned that to response to a caller from Hungary that doctors here in the U.S. are tipped by the pharmaceutical companies. I'm a practicing physician. Offended by that because I don't think that's a practice in the U.S. to be tipped by the pharmaceutical companies.
I meant it in terms of, you know, how many of us have been in doctors' offices and pharmaceutical reps are in there treating everybody to lunch, and it happens all the time. I don't mean in terms of money, in terms of trips and conferences, and we've done a lot of shows on that. Not financially tipping people, but taking care of them in other ways.
But just to make this point that nowadays the regulations are that if the pharmaceutical company has a dinner program, you can't bring even your spouse with you. So that's number one. Number two, as far as the debate between the private and the government-run system is concerned, I'm not sure why we have to have this debate on one extreme. Either has to be all private or all government. I think, as a practice physician, my observation has been, why can't we run two parallel programs and let the people and the buyer decide, and the government can be an equal player with the commercial and the private sector and compete with the rates, because the commercial sector, as you mentioned earlier, has a surplus of services and so many other factors contributing to the rising cost of the health care. And if government jumps in as an equal partner or a parallel player, and let the people decide if they have a competitive rate to bring the healthcare costs down, and people will decide whether they want to go with the government services or the services provided by the private sector.
Well, I would say that you're brilliant.
That's what we're doing.
That is exactly what these plans do. Mm-hmm. They let people choose. Do you want to stay in the private sector or go into the private sector if you don't have anything, or do you want to go into the public sector? That is exactly what these plans do, what you just said.
Mm-hmm. How do they deal? Thanks very much for your call, Quamar. How do they deal all the plans with the cost of drugs?
Well, you know what? It's very interesting. There's no question that the rate of increase in costs of pharmaceuticals is higher than any other part of healthcare. But the reality is that drug costs only make up 10% of total healthcare costs.
Hmm.
So even if we cut drug costs in half, we'd only cut 5%. So it's important, I think, to get more important rather than the total cost is the cost to the consumer and the cost to the purchaser.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, we pay so much more for the same exact drug from the same company than the healthcare systems in Europe, and that's just not right. So I think what we need here is some fairer pricing of pharmaceuticals. But pharmaceuticals really represent only about 10% of the cost. The biggest costs are hospital costs, and more than about a third of the costs that we incur are in hospitals. And many of those hospitalizations are either preventable or potentially even unnecessary. We have a lot of older people who are dying in the hospital who would much rather die at home or die in a hospice. And I think that it's the hospital costs that we really need to be worrying about. We want to get the drug costs under control. We want to get fairer prices on drugs. But it's not the drug costs that are a significant contributor to the overall inflation in the system. Is that clear?
Extremely. That's why you're our guest. Thank you. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Professor Helen Halpin is our guest, director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California at Berkeley, and joins us from time to time to talk about health care issues. Today, of course, we are talking about health care because Senator Hillary Clinton was the latest candidate to unveil a health care plan in the run-up to the 2008 presidential election. We're looking at her plan and how it compares to other Democratic candidates, and also what it is we're looking for. We obviously want this debate in this country, and it's a huge issue, probably second to Iraq in the presidential race. What are we looking for? What do we want to change? How do these plans address what's sick about the healthcare system? More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, you may have seen his cover story of the New York Times Magazine, I believe on August 19th. We'll talk with the author of The Stillborn God, Religion, Politics, and the Modern West. He says, and he does at great length in a very deep and interesting book, we need to revisit the tension between political theology and modern political philosophy. So that's coming up the second hour of our show. Healthcare. This hour, Senator Clinton has unveiled her long-awaited plan, and we're looking at how it differs or is similar to other plans put together by Democratic candidates and what we're looking for in terms of healthcare reform. 800-486-8655. Sue from Westby is next. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Maybe I'm getting too detailed with the plans, but I'm wondering if any of them would give any type of incentive or rebate or some type of positive reinforcement for those of us who choose healthy lifestyles and are able to avoid hospitals. And we just don't use much health care at all. I mean, we have insurance, and obviously I understand you need insurance for the acute appendix that you don't plan on or anything like that. But, you know, when you go for years without having to use the system, it just seems like you should have some sort of positive reinforcement for that.
I think you're right. This is important to acknowledge and to provide incentives for people to pursue healthier lifestyles. And I know all three candidates have talked about the importance of prevention and healthy behaviors and the need for these kinds of incentives. None of them has really detailed exactly how this would work. I know here in California, our governor is very hot on this issue of prevention and wellness and trying to provide incentives for individuals to eat healthily and to be physically active and not smoke and drink moderately. The question is how you structure that. And a lot of this has been tried in the private sector. For example, they give people a discount on their premium if they don't smoke. But what the problem with a lot of these approaches is the flip side then is that the person who does smoke has to pay more for their premium. And unfortunately, if you look at what the actuarial value for something like smoking, let's say, is, it would probably be about $10 more per person per month, their cost, because you see they die younger. Mm-hmm. And so the $10 more a month probably isn't going to persuade a smoker to stop smoking, because they're spending more than that on cigarettes anyway. So as an incentive, an inducement, it doesn't really work. But anything that you save is going to have to be financed by those who don't engage in the behavior you do. So I think we're in desperate need of some creative thinking about how we reward people like you who do pursue a healthy lifestyle and as a result have fewer health care costs in a way that doesn't punish the people that we want to help stop engaging in those behaviors. So it's wide open right now for creativity, and a lot of the approaches that have been tried in the past have backfired. In the state of Kansas, they, for example, charge people more if they smoke. They had high cholesterol, they had high blood pressure, they didn't exercise, et cetera. And what happened was that the people who engaged in unhealthy behaviors to a large degree dropped their insurance and became uninsured. And I don't think that's the outcome that we want, because it became unaffordable to them. Mm. So I like your idea, and I think all three candidates support that idea. And, in fact, Hillary, you should take a look at her website, because she laid out in detail some of the prevention and wellness incentives that she would have in her plan. And that was unveiled several months ago.
Hmm. Thank you, Sue.
You're welcome.
Goodbye. Let's go to Martha from Baraboo. Hi, Martha.
Hi there. Thank you for allowing me to be on the program. I have been listening and very intrigued by Hillary's plan as well as the other plans. But my question is, what is the real likelihood of anything really happening? I've heard all this before.
Yes.
I'm basically having trouble believing it. And if it can happen, how long is it going to take? Are we talking a year after they're elected, or are we talking 10 years?
That's a good question. Right.
That is an excellent question. My understanding from the Edwards and Obama campaigns is that they would make this a priority that they would jump on immediately. And, in fact, if you look at historically when we've had any sort of major social change like this, it usually is accompanied by a significant gain of Democrats in the Congress and a Democratic president. And the last time we had that situation, well, we did have it under Clinton, President Bill Clinton, but the time before that was under Lyndon Johnson. And so you need this powerful majority in the Congress, and you need a Democratic president, and it has to be a priority, because all the political science literature suggests that if you don't, you have a window of opportunity when you take office, and that window of opportunity is about 100 days. And if you don't act within those 100 days, that window closes. Now, Obama and Edwards have said they would act immediately on this. My concern about Senator Clinton is that she has said she has promised she will get this done by the end of her second term, which is 9.5 years from now.
Hmm.
And I think for many Americans, that's not soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to listen very carefully about what their priority is, because
that's
I can tell you, based on past experience, that if this does not happen right away, and what happened under Clinton was the Bill Clinton, they did Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which created a firestorm. They did NAFTA, and then they got to health care.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they got there, everyone had shot all their arrows into the plan to the point that it was dead.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call, Martha. Let's go to next to Joe from Bloomer. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
The question I have is, your guest stated that employers would be paying less and employees would also be paying less. So my question is where is the money going to come from to not only cover the people that currently have health care, but also the 47 million that don't? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Joe.
Good question. Right now, there are a large number of employers that aren't paying anything. So I should say, for employers who currently offer coverage, they should be paying less. For employers who aren't currently offer coverage, they will be paying more, because they will be paying a percentage of payroll. So a big chunk of this money will come from employers that don't currently offer coverage. Secondly, and more importantly, as we discussed before, all these candidates talk about rolling back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy and using that money instead to finance health care.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another Joe from Wausau, this one. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a comment and, well, and another thing that I would like to comment on and get some responses.
All right. We have about a minute left.
Okay. Well, number one is in Wausau, in Wisconsin, we have a lot of plans like this that were brought up several times. And every time we bring this up, there's this huge backlash that says they're socializing medicine. Taxes are going to go up, and they're basically like communist fear-mongering. And the second point is I live with my girlfriend. We're not married. She used to have health care with me from my employer. Her employer doesn't cover health care.
Hmm.
Recently, we passed a referendum in Wisconsin that was marketed as a gay marriage ban, but that actually denied all rights to any unmarried couple, which includes me and my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And would these plans address unmarried?
All right, we have about 15 seconds.
In these plans, both you and your girlfriend would have affordable, comprehensive coverage, as all Americans will. And I forget what the first part of the question was. Oh, the socialized medicine. You just need to educate people about what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Socialized medicine is when the government owns and operates the means of production. No one is talking about that, okay? We in America have a very well-developed private healthcare delivery system, and under all of these plans, whether it's the public component or the private plan component, will continue to rely on the provision of medical care by private and doctors.
We have to go. Thank you so much, Professor Halpin,
oh,
as always.
Thank you.
Professor Helen Halpin, Director of the Center for Health and Public Policy Studies at the University of California at Berkeley. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program, to John Treader for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks, everybody, for your calls. News is next.